Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and welcome to another meeting of our Larry Mueller Show Book Club. Glad you're with us today. Just a quick mention, our book club, we do it every couple of months. We feature books by Wisconsin authors or books that are set in Wisconsin or both. Wisconsin authors and books set in Wisconsin. And that's what we have today with author Jessie Garcia. Her book is titled The Business Trip. It's a great thriller, and it's going to keep you guessing. I can tell you that for sure. I had a lot of fun reading it, and it's nice to be able to talk with Jessie again. She's a longtime Wisconsin journalist, the state's first female sports anchor. She's now CBS 58 Milwaukee news director, and she's an award-winning nonfiction author turned to fiction. And as we talk with Jessie, I want to hear from you. Let us know your favorite character in The Business Trip, or maybe some questions about writing thrillers. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Jessie Garcia, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. It's really good to be here, Larry. I know it's been some years since we last spoke about one of my nonfiction books, and I'm thrilled to be back.
Yeah, I think it was at least 12 years ago we talked about your work with the Green Bay Packers. But this book, I'd say you drove me nuts.
I'll take that as a compliment.
I kept saying,
right?
What? I did that.
I wanted people to have fun with it.
Oh, my goodness me. It was a lot of fun. Where'd you get the idea for the premise of the business trip?
I actually went on a business trip myself. And similar to the characters in this book, I was flying Milwaukee to Denver, Denver to San Diego. I changed it to Madison to Denver, Denver to San Diego in this book as a little ode to my hometown, because I did grow up in Madison. And I kind of wanted to give a shout out to my roots. But when I was on the way, on the trip, I was actually in the Denver airport, waiting for my, at my layover, waiting for my next flight, when this book sort of popped into my head. And I got really, just excited and started thinking, ooh, what if that happened? And what if that happened? And that happened. And honestly, the second I got back from a journalism conference. And the second I got back from it, I sat down and just started pounding away on the laptop, and it took many forms from that. But the very initial, nugget of what could happen was what popped into my head in the Denver airport.
Oh man, I tell you, you had to do a lot more thinking about that along the way, because without spoiling, we've got a lot of people who've read the book listening today, but there are many thousands who haven't read the book yet, but are interested in it. So, without spoiling everything, what's the story about?
The story is about two women. You're going to meet two women in the opening chapters. The first chapter is about Jasmine, and both these women live in Madison, I should say, right off the bat. They're from very different walks of life, though. Jasmine is a bar waitress. She's kind of been down on her luck her whole life, starting with how her own mother treated her and just throughout her entire life. She's now trying to run away from an abusive boyfriend, and so she's sneaking out in the middle of the night. She saved up money for an entire year to get on a plane to go to Denver. So it opens with her sneaking out in the middle of the night and getting to the airport. And then the next chapter, you're going to meet Stephanie, who is a news director, which is something I'm familiar with, as you said.
Yeah.
I am a news director, which is somebody who oversees all of the journalists in a newsroom at a TV station and makes the decisions about what stories you're covering and things like that. And so Stephanie is being sent on a business trip to a journalism conference, much as I was. And so she's going on that same flight. So both Stephanie and Jasmine are destined to be on this same plane. But after the initial chapters where you get to know them and their backstories, et cetera, the points of view then change to the coworkers, their friends, because they're starting to get kind of strange texts from each one of them, and again, these two women are strangers, so you're seeing it from different people's perspective, unsettling text, something maybe off or wrong. And then both women are declared missing, and it turns into a giant mystery of what could have happened with these strangers. There are 10 points of view in this book, and that's a lot of points of view, but yes. It also allows you to really see the mystery from a lot of different people's angles and pick up clues from different people all along the way.
Yeah, I love the approach you took. And I understand you have a passage to read to give us an idea about the book, too. What do you have for us?
Yeah. So you had asked me to do about a one-minute passage or so.
Yeah.
The one that I chose, I thought this might be appropriate because I wanted to have a little taste of Madison. And I also, because we're talking on Wisconsin Public Radio /NPR, there is a mention of that in this little passage as well. So this is actually from Stephanie's chapter, and she's driving to work on the morning of the flight. So the flight is in the afternoon. She's working a half day, and she's just driving into work, and it's just a little slice of her life as she goes. So here's what I've got. The day was cold but sunny, good for flying. Traffic in Madison was nearly non-existent, and my view on the way to work was a mix of suburban houses, mature oak trees, and upscale strip malls, nearly all of them having a Starbucks and a Panera. I always flip between NPR in the morning to make sure I had a handle on the news of the day. This time, there was coverage of an earthquake in Egypt and a strike at a local construction company. I made a note to assign a reporter to the strike story and pulled in the parking lot at the TV station. The effects of the Ambien were still there as I turned off the car. Sleeping drugs were weird. Sometimes I woke up feeling sharp and completely rested. Other days I would be moving in slow motion or swimming underwater. This was somewhere in between. I shook my head to clear it before going in, vowing to grab a second cup of coffee. I would try to catch some sleep on the plane. I would need plenty of energy later. As I got out of the car, I looked at my longtime workplace. Something about those big satellite dishes and the call letters on the side of the building with the CBS eyeball still got me jazzed after all of years. One of my former bosses used to say that television had the biggest megaphone of anyone, and I believed it to be true. We had a power and a responsibility, neither of which I took lightly. I had fallen in love with TV when my dad would watch the evening news. The names of that era, Diane Sawyer, Barbara Walters, Peter Jennings, still had meaning to me. End of excerpt. I was picturing in my mind my first workplace, which was WISC-TV, Channel 3, the CBS affiliate in Madison. And that's where I got my career started. So I also wanted to give them a little shout out in this book by having her work there. And I was picturing kind of that west side of town. I pictured that Stephanie lived out on the west side of town and was driving to work. Kind of along Raymond Road and those roads out there for those who know Madison.
It was a lot of fun for me to read. And I have many friends who work in commercial television here in town. Kurt Westbrook worked at Channel 3 maybe when you were there.
And yes.
Kurt's a really good old friend. Actually, we had a house together there for a while as buddies way back in those days. So
funny.
So he might even be listening now for that. But it was nice that you picked Madison. What does the city mean to you, by the way?
Madison? Oh, it means so much. Madison is where I was born and grew up. I went to Madison East High School. The only reason I didn't go to UW-Madison was because I had grown up 10 minutes from campus, and I had actually gone to preschool on campus, and I just wanted to spread my wings a little bit. So I wound up going out to Boston University for college. But I returned to Madison, as I said, for my first job. I got a job as a sports reporter right out of college, and that turned into me being Wisconsin's first female sports anchor when I was allowed to be on the anchor desk reading the nightly sports. I feel I owe everything to Madison. Madison was an absolutely fantastic place to grow up in the 1970s, 1980s, into the 1990s when I was, starting out my career. Madison is a wonderful city, and I tell people that all the time, and my parents are still there. living over on the east side, not too far from East High School. And I, you know, get over there fairly often to hang out and enjoy the town.
Well, East High School was my high school, too. And I live pretty close to East High School as well. I'm not even a mile from there. So
Small world, for sure.
Yeah, we've traveled all over the world, and then I wind up a half a mile from where I went to high school. Well, Stephanie and Jasmine, these two women are, let me put it this way. How are these two women similar and different
than what you've talked about?
Yeah.
Sure, sure. I think, you know, when you read it, you're going to think, oh, they're very different. They come from different economic statuses. They have different circles of friends that they would travel in, different families. But you come to find out as the book goes along that they have a lot more similarities than you think. And I think that's true of a lot of us that way. I think we all have a lot more things in common than we do different. But we don't know that. You know, you can look at a stranger on a plane and make assumptions about them and, you know, be 10,000% wrong. And so I wanted to kind of explore and play with the similarities and differences and also that aspect of, you know, the people that we run across when we're on planes, trains, whatever it might be, just out in the world. You know, and they say you can judge somebody in 7 seconds. And I think we all do that. You know, we make snap judgments. And then, you know, it's hard for us to actually dig deeper and find out, oh, this person might not actually be, you know, what I think they are. They might be quite different and quite similar to me.
You mentioned, talk about Jasmine for a minute here. Jasmine, I think, well, I wonder how much she's been shaped by events in her past. And maybe you could talk about that.
Yeah, and let me just say, when I was writing these characters, I've had people say to me, you know, these are two very different women just in their lifestyle. You know, how did you write two very different women? And the truth of the matter is there is a little bit of me in both Jasmine and Stephanie. You know, Jasmine, she grew up on, quote unquote, the wrong side of the track. And at her high school, she wasn't in the uber popular crowd and, you know, all of those things. And that was a little bit of me. I can feel some of that in me. You know, I was not in the crowd that really was in the book. I have a group called the Fun Bunch, and not to call out kids from high school, but there really was a group in high school that called themselves the Fun Bunch. And they were kind of, you know, this clique that was just sort of, allegedly having a lot more fun than the rest of us. And those of us who were on the outside of that, I think always felt, you know, kind of bad or just kind of jealous of the situation that was going on. So I channeled all of that. I mean, obviously it's fiction, so I made up a lot of things as well. But I could channel some of those feelings and emotions, into it. And then Stephanie, you know, then I grew up to become a news director and travel for conferences and that sort of thing. And so I could understand Stephanie too, and the incredibly long hours that she was putting in and the amount of work she was putting in and the feeling like, oh, everybody thinks it's so amazing you're going to San Diego for a conference, but she knows better because she knows how much work it's going to be. You know, it's not just playtime. So it was fun to be able to sort of dive into different characters' heads and be able to play with it. And then each one does have to have a backstory, you know, as my agent and editor always tell me, you know, there has to be some reason that they're going to do what they're going to do, or that, you know, they're going to react how they're going to react. So you got to build in that backstory too, and think about the events of their life that would have shaped them.
Yeah. One of them is jealousy, I think, when it comes to Jasmine. How does maybe talk about how jealousy shapes her?
Yeah. I think, jealousy is a big theme in this book. A class is a theme, you know, in this book, and kind of the jealousy of different classes too, and thinking, you know, oh, my life would be perfect if ...
Yeah.
You know, or that person's life is perfect because ... And not fully, again, like understanding the other person's life isn't perfect. You know, they have their own things as well. And I do think in this world, particularly with social media, but I think, you know, jealousy is such a theme in our world. You know, the whole FOMO, you know, the fear of missing out, the looking at other people and thinking, oh, my gosh, they look amazing and I look terrible. And you don't think about the, you know, 50 hours they took to get ready and the lighting and the filters and the this and that, you know. So it was fun to explore a little bit of jealousy, too.
Jessie Garcia, our guest, her novel is titled The Business Trip. It is a thriller that you're going to, I know, if you haven't read it already, when you do read it, you're going to say, oh, my goodness, where did that come from? More than once, several times, as a matter of fact, over the course of reading it. Questions, comments, maybe it's about writing, maybe it's about the book, give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking with Jessie Garcia, her book, The Business Trip. And again, you can join in, numbers 800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Jasmine, you know, you do take on many sensitive real-world topics. We were talking a little bit about jealousy, but domestic violence and abuse certainly takes a role there. And those scenes that you write about in the book seem very realistic to me. And you must have talked to people, or maybe part of your experience as a news person would have helped inform your writing on those in those scenes.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you saying that about the writing. You know, obviously, scenes like that are not easy to write. But for me, I have obviously covered any number of news events and seen a lot of what they call criminal complaints with the, you know, information about what may have happened, et cetera. But I've also watched, you know, as much TV and movies as anybody else. And I sort of would like pull little visions or scenes from different things that I had, you know, seen over the years and just kind of pull them all into one amalgamation and try to make it realistic. And, you know, I did the best I could. And I don't know if somebody might come in and say, you know, no, this is not accurate, or yes, this is accurate. But in fiction, you do the best you can because you really are, as writers, you're pulling strings from all sorts of experiences that you have, you know, whether it be something, a friend you've talked to, whether it be, like I said, a show you've seen or, you know, a book you've read. And you just, you store it all, you know, like I just have all these like images and bits of dialogue and characters and stuff kind of tucked away into this corner of my brain to come out whenever I feel it's appropriate in a book, you know, bring that person out, bring that scene out. And you can do research, of course, too. You know, research is important so that it doesn't sound completely ridiculous. But you hope that some people in fiction will allow a little bit of poetic license, too, for the story.
Yeah, so. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we've spent a lot of time here on Jasmine and Stephanie, and rightly so, but we get to hear from a whole cast of characters in your book, and you did a marvelous job, I think, of giving each character their own distinct voice. How'd you go about that? How'd you make sure that each character had their own distinct voice?
Well, thank you. It was just fun to head hop. Honestly, each day, you know, you'd be like, okay, today I'm going to be Robert. Today I'm going to be Bruce. Today I'm Dave. Today I'm Bill. You know, whatever it is, and you just sort of, I almost feel almost like an out of body experience. Like you feel yourself moving into that person. And I will say, for instance, the abusive boyfriend, Jasmine's abusive boyfriend, whose name is Glenn, his POV was not in the original draft, and so that, there's a little behind the scenes. My editor had me put it in. She wanted to hear from Glenn's point of view. And so I really had to channel, okay, what would the abusive boyfriend be thinking and doing? And, you know, just really get into his head, which was not something I had expected to do in the first draft. So, you know, that can be kind of different too. But for me, I need complete and total silence when I'm writing, like complete and total. I can't be in a library or a coffee shop. I even get annoyed if the neighbors are rolling their garbage can down the driveway because it breaks my concentration, because I get so deeply into the story and the person's head and what would they be doing in this moment that it's like, you know, I could write for 6 hours and it feels like 20 minutes have passed. It's what I call a writer's high as opposed to a runner's high. And it's the most fun thing in the world when you get into it.
I liked a lot of those characters, and I have friends who are similar to many of those characters. Robert was who was Stephanie's neighbor.
Yeah.
I thought he was a kind of a perfect person. Maybe talk about Robert for a minute.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Robert is Stephanie's neighbor, and he was a fun character to write. In fact, I've had several people reach out to me and say that Robert was their favorite character in the book, and they wonder if there's any kind of sequel that could involve Robert. So I will bring it up with my editor and see what she thinks. I do have another book coming out in January. We can talk about that later. It is not a sequel, though, but brand new characters, but very similar format in multi-point of view mystery involving television news. But yes, Robert was, he was really fun. And, you know, when I'm writing, so there are two types of writers, they say. There are plotters and pantsers. Plotters plot everything out, and pantsers fly by the seat of their pants. And I am a pantser, and I feel like I'm in good company because so is Stephen King. I read his memoir, and he said he has pantsed every book he's ever written. And, you know, he never plots, and I never plot. Other than, like, the germ of the idea, I can't plot out the whole book. I just have to, like, I call it pulling taffy. I have to pull taffy every day and see where that next chapter is going to take me. So, for instance, Robert wasn't planned, nor were a lot of these characters. You know, I just kind of got to the point where I'm like, I wrote the first two chapters on Jasmine and Stephanie, and then, or first, I think it was four that gets them going. And then when I switched over, I'm like, okay, now I should write from the neighbor's perspective. But, okay, what is Robert going to be like? You know, who's he going to be? And how is he going to tie back to certain things? And in a mystery thriller, you always want to have Easter eggs and things too, and things that people will go back to. So, for instance, I had him interested in musical theater, and there's a little bit of Fiddler on the Roof in there that then plays later in the book as well. So you're sort of dropping Easter eggs as you go.
I liked him a lot. I thought he was a great character, and I would agree if you can get him into another book down the road. Judith sent us an email. Do you always enjoy reading mysteries? Have you always enjoyed mysteries and thrillers, even as a young person?
I have, yes. My favorite book as a child was called The Westing Game. By Ellen Raskin, who's a Wisconsin writer. And it's actually very, it informed me in this book because it's multi-point of view mystery, but it's a YA book. It's meant for young people. I still would highly recommend it to anybody who wants to write a thriller in this style because she's so good. And she drops in so many fun clues and like wordplay. You don't even realize that you're being, you know,
manipulated
until the end when you go back and go, oh, why didn't I see that clue that was hidden in plain sight? And I read The Westing Game, I don't know, dozens of times. And I also read Stephen King. There's a picture of me reading Carrie at probably the age of 12 at my grandma's house. So I always knew that I liked that genre. In particular, and the thing I like about it is that the mystery part, that you as the reader feeling that you're engaged and you're trying to figure out what's happening and you have theories and you have guesses and you want to know if you're right and, you know, is the writer going to fool you in the end or not? Those are fun to me.
You know, I was thinking about your career as a journalist, and now, and you still are, but you're also a novelist now, and I wonder how you... how the writing style of a journalist has it, was it a help or a hindrance in putting your novel together?
You know, both. Help in that I think I'm a very fast writer, or I've been told I'm a very fast writer. I can kind of sit down and bang out chapters. They're not perfect by any means. They need a lot of refining, but I can just sort of roll. And I think I attribute that to, in journalism, we have to write fast. You know, we've got a 5 o'clock newscast, a 6 o'clock, a 10 o'clock. And, you know, there are times you'd only have a few minutes to really write your story and then go on the air. So I think journalists in general can kind of, you know, organize thoughts and get going. But, you know, hindrance in that I hadn't written fiction since college.
Oop, we lost you.
The first one that sold.
Well, I'm sorry, we lost you there. Can you just repeat what you just said?
I'm sorry. I didn't know you lost me. Yes. What was I saying?
Your work as a reporter and shaping your
career. Oh, yes. Yes. So I think I could write fast because I was a reporter, because we have a lot of deadlines that we have to write for. But I hadn't done fiction since I was in college. So I had to take a fiction, I didn't have to, I wanted to take a fiction writing prompt class where they send you prompts, like a photo or a piece of dialogue or a scene, and then you write 1,000 or 1,500 words based off that, just gets your creative juices going. So I needed to sort of teach myself how to write fiction because I was so immersed in the nonfiction world of journalism. I had to give myself license to, you know, relearn how to do fiction and remind myself of all the things that you need in fiction. The, you know, the emotions, the senses, you know, the more you can get in smells and tastes and touches and, you know, things like that, it makes a scene come alive for the reader. And I had to remind myself of those things.
Yeah. And I bet that reporting taught you a bit about the sort of writing about the real ordinary people who live in the state.
That's true, too. You know, one thing that my agents and my editor, who are based out of New York, one thing that they all said is they said, we just love Midwestern people that you put into your books. And the book number two that's coming out in January has a lot more of that as well. And they said, we just feel like you write the Midwest so authentically. And I said, well, thank you. And I live in the Midwest and I love the Midwest. And I think the Midwest is overlooked in thrillers. A lot of thrillers are based in, you know, Maine or New York or London. And there aren't that many that are set in the Midwest. And it's such a rich area for characters and scenes. And so I have vowed that all of my thrillers are going to be based in the Midwest. This next one is set in Detroit, and the third one that I'm writing right now is set in Minneapolis.
Oh my gosh! So this is all while you're doing your other job.
Indeed, I write only on the weekends. I don't have time to write weeknights because, you know, I work a 10-hour day, and by the time I get home, you know, my brain is just fried. So I save it all up for weekends, and I get really excited on weekends to write. I'll wake up at 5 a.m. and I'll write, you know, again, 5 or 6 hours, take a break, you know, take a little nap, maybe write a bit more. I look at it as a really enjoyable hobby, so it's like something I look forward to. And my kids will joke that I can't cook. I can't sew, I can't sing, I can't, you know, garden. The only thing that I can do in their minds is write and do journalism, which is accurate.
Did your kids ever think, well, is this what everybody's parents know?
They do say to me, like, when they read The Business Trip, they said, your mind is warped. they're pretty funny. And I have grown kids. They're 26 and 22 now, so they can handle most things.
Well, let's turn our attention to one of the other main characters in the book, I guess, is Trent, who is one of the most very flawed characters. That he's kind of a louse. Let's put it that way. Well, I called him a louse. Tell us about Trent and who he is.
Yeah. So for those who haven't read the book, Trent is a person that you're going to encounter at the on the business trip. He's at the journalism conference that Stephanie is going to. And so you get his perspective. And he winds up getting sucked into the mystery as well in multiple different ways. But he is how to describe Trent. I basically took, you know, every sort of non-appealing aspect of anybody I'd ever met and threw it into one character. And it was really fun because I have met people like Trent. First of all, you know, he's full of bravado. He's full of himself. He walks into a room and thinks I'm the best looking person in this room, and you know, clearly the best looking woman is going to be interested in me because I'm me. And you know, he has very little attachment to anybody or anything, and he just wants a good time. And I've had people now say to me, I'm now using the word Trent, like as in the form of, oh, there's a Trent. That guy's a Trent. So that kind of makes me laugh. But I've also had people come up to me and say, this character, whether it be Trent or whomever, like, you didn't base this character on me, did you? And I have to tell people, no, there's not a character that is based on one single person. They are all amalgamations of many people.
Yeah. Well, and you're pretty nice to, I thought you were pretty nice to the station managers. Bill would have been one, and I forget the...
And Dave, yeah.
Dave.
Yeah, Bill and Dave. I think they didn't get any, you know, too negative of characteristics. They're just trying to figure out what's going on. All of the different ones, Bruce is the assistant news director, and he's a genuine, nice guy just trying to figure things out. So, I read a review somewhere where somebody said that I wrote all the men in a negative way, and I don't agree with that. I think, Trent is Trent and Glenn is Glenn, and they have their faults. But you know, a lot of the other men in the book are very nice, genuine men.
Yeah. Boy, I wonder who wrote that review. That I speaking of reviews, when I first got the book, I look right on the cover and I see two blurbs from Freda McFadden and the other from Lisa Gardner, who are really noted and notable people in your field, your type of fiction.
Yeah, I was so honored. I don't know either one of them. This was all from my publisher and editor and agents. You know, they know people.
Yeah.
They move in all these circles. And so they sent it out to various authors and asked them to blurb. And I did follow up with an email just thinking, anybody who blurbed for it, I sent them an email thanking them. And I did hear back from Frida and Lisa and the others, you know, just saying you're welcome. So, you know, good luck with your debut. And, you know, it was very, very humbling. And I was just so honored because, yeah, these are huge names in the industry. And for them to read my little book was crazy to me.
What motivates characters to do bad or evil things?
Well, what motivates any of us, right? Like, I think we all have a lot of layers to us. And, you know, motivations typically revolve around money, success or jealousy in some form. I don't know. There's an old saying that, you know, people commit murder for only one of three or four reasons, you know, and it usually comes back to the same basic reasons. I think that I like to think about that, though, like what would motivate somebody to do something and to kind of go, you know, a little left of center, so to speak, and do something different than the rest of the population. But, you know, who amongst us hasn't had, thoughts? We just don't act on them.
Oh, we got an email from a listener who asks, What are your memories of the legendary Orlando Chiosa?
Orlando who? I'm sorry.
KJOSA. I'm not sure who it is.
KJOSA. Oh, I think. Oh, I think I know who they're talking about. Orlando Cajosa.
Oh, Cajosa. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
I don't know if you know who that is.
I don't.
I'm not sure who's writing in, but they clearly know my mother or know that there's some connection there. So this was my mother and Orlando dated when I was young. And then they went their separate ways. And I know Orlando passed away many years ago now. And I believe there's a bench dedicated to him down along Yahara Parkway or Yahara Park right there on the east side. He was a big canoer, and I think there's a bench dedicated to him. He was a great guy. When I was growing up and my mom and Orlando were dating, he was fun and he was so sweet to me. And I just have a lot of positive memories of going to Great America, riding the rides, for instance, lots of fun times in Madison growing up. So,
okay.
So that was a nice, very personal note somebody sent in.
Jessie Garcia, our guest today, her book is titled The Business Trip. Questions or comments, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you listening in today on WPR News. It's our book club day, and we're talking with Jessie Garcia about her book, The Business Trip. Just a reminder, two women who don't know each other but have boarded the same plane. Later, they text their friends the same messages about the same man, and soon the message becomes stranger and more erratic, and they disappear. What happens? That's the short version of a very twisty and turny novel that I really had a lot of fun reading and enjoyed it very, very much. Many times I said, what? When I, when I went along. You know, technology, we often talk about technology and personal data on the show, and technology plays a big role. And I loved text messages being very crucial part of your book.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I wanted to put that in just because I think that's the world we live in. So many of us communicate so many things via text, and it's almost more rare to pick up the phone and actually talk to somebody, in some instances. And so I thought that would be realistic. And also, things can get totally misconstrued in text messages. As we know about tone or just what you're saying, or, does this person know the same information that I know? So I thought it would be a fun way to kind of keep the action rolling. It's also set apart from the other text with a different font and just set in a different part of the page. So it kind of moves your eyes along and, keeps it rolling that way, too.
Another reader sent in, Stephanie shares that her job has caused her to be distant with her son, but she loves her job and excels at it. How should you balance your life with your career?
Very good question. So I mentioned I have two sons, 26 and 22, and they both live in Minneapolis, which is one of the reasons I set this third book in Minneapolis, just because I've been there a lot and know it well. Thankfully I don't have an estranged relationship with the two of them. We're very, very close, but I could imagine how, a woman or man, anybody who's, in a very, very busy career, things could just get more and more distant as the children get older and they're into their own lives and careers and you're into yours. And, I had a scene in there where she has to practically beg her son to have lunch with her the day after Christmas because he wants to go with his father and his father's new family for Christmas. These are very real things that happen in people's lives. And so I wanted to create a character like that who's, successful and happy, but feeling somewhat unfulfilled in other ways in her relationships. And it's not easy to balance everything. There's no question, like I said, I'm working 9 or 10 hours a day and then, trying to write on the weekends and trying to balance everything else in my life. And sometimes you have to say to yourself, what they tell you on an airplane, you know, your own oxygen mask first, you know. I do meditation. I do yoga. I do things that, you know, try to keep me somewhat calm and centered. But some days are easier than others, as we all know.
Jasmine and Stephanie, I think they both have a dream of having a new life, a different life. But starting over can be scary for sure. What do you think about taking a new direction later in life?
Something that I know that people in my age group, I'm in my 50s, and, you know, people that I've talked to think about a lot, you know, because you start to look at, oh, what do I want to do for, you know, the second half of my life? Or hopefully you have, you know, that much life left. You never know. And so, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with friends and coworkers and family and that kind of thing as to, you know, all right, you know, here you are. What do you really want? Is this where you really want to be? I've seen a lot of people make career shifts, move to new cities. You know, some people have gone, you know, all out and sold everything and bought an RV and traveled the country, you know, and other people have just made little changes in their lives. But I do find it fascinating, you know, when you sort of reach the, I don't even want to call it the top of the mountain because there's no real top of the mountain, but you know, you've maybe reached a point in your career where you've done a lot of things, and then you're thinking, all right, but what else do I want to do in my life? And that's honestly how I was with writing. You know, I had written 3 nonfiction books, and 2 published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press and 1 that I self-published, and I enjoyed that immensely. But when I kind of stopped and thought, I thought, you know, I want to give fiction a try before too long. And I took that fiction prompt class, which was just an online class to kind of get my creative juices flowing. And then I started writing thrillers. And the first 2 got close with this agent, but never got over the hump. She was like, no, we're not quite there. And it wasn't until this 3rd one that she said, okay, we're there. This is the one. We've got some refining to do, but this is the one we can sell.
Actually, we got an email from Howard asking, how hard was it to get your fiction writing published? Was this your first try?
Well, there you go. It's not an easy road. I for any writers who are out there listening, I was in those querying trenches, you know, where you're sending out blind queries to people and you're just looking on, they call it manuscript wish list, MSWL. Which is where agents put what their wish list is for manuscripts, what they would like to see. So you try to find agents that match up to things that you're writing, and you look them up on their websites, and everybody has different submission guidelines, so it takes a long time to do this. But you submit, you know, maybe 5 or 10 a day, and you just go and go and go, and most of the time you don't hear anything back, and you get discouraged, and, you know, it's a whole long process. I was just very fortunate that this one agent, say her name because she's so wonderful, Meg Ruley from the Jane Rutt Rosen Agency, had gotten back to me on one of those blind queries. And this was a different book I had written called The Neighbors, which is still only lives on my laptop. But she had said, I really love the first half of the book. The second half doesn't pay off for me, but let's talk. And we had very long conversations on the phone. And like I said, we couldn't get that one over the hump. But she said, let's stay in touch. And it wasn't until years later that I wrote The Business Trip. And I wrote to her first and said, you know, you may not remember me. I hope you do, though. We talked years ago. I've got a new book, and I would love for you to be the first to read it. And it took off from there.
That's a really, really cool story. By the way, how's the response been to, I mean, it's been out now for a year?
Since January.
Yeah, since January. What's the response like?
It's been great. It's been really fun. We had a kickoff launch at Boswell Books in Milwaukee back in January with a, you know, really great turnout. They don't do like big national book tours, but I have done book clubs. I'm doing a book club with somebody who's, I can't even remember what state right off the top of my head. It's deep in the South somewhere, you know, in another month or so, just virtually. So, you know, you do things like that. Things like being on your show have been fantastic. A few other podcasts and radio shows, interviews. And, you know, to see the reviews, it is still stunning to me. If you go on Goodreads or something and you see that, I don't even know how many tens of thousands of people have read your book. And you're going to get the full gamut. You're going to get 1 stars all the way up to 5 stars. and you can't let yourself get too excited about 5 stars and you can't get too down in the dumps about 1 star, you're not going to please everybody. You know, you just have to be like, I did my best. And you may like it, you may not, but I did my best.
Well, your best was pretty good. I got, just like this past week, I got an advance reader copy of your novel, your new novel, The Fair Weather Friend.
Oh, excellent.
No one saw this storm coming by Jesse Garcia. And say some a few things about that particular new novel that's coming out.
Yeah, so this is the one that's set in Detroit. And again, it's about television news, because obviously I know that world. And my agents had said that there's not a lot of television news in fiction. So they really like the behind-the-scenes peek at television news. And you're actually going to get even more of it in this next book. It's about a meteorologist. She's super popular in Detroit. She has a big fan club. But one night, she goes on her dinner break, and she doesn't return. And she's declared missing, and then the next day her body is found, and then it turns into a giant multi-point of view mystery again of who done it. And so you're going to meet a lot of different characters, both in the TV world and outside the TV world, because it kind of volleys back and forth between some of the viewers and some of the people who are in the newsroom and worked with Faith, the meteorologist. So this one was another really, really fun one to write. And if you like The Business Trip, I think you're going to like this one as well.
Oh, well, I'm definitely going to be reading this. And maybe we will be having you back later on once it comes out. It always takes a while to get these things written and done, for sure,
yeah.
as you're pointing out. You dedicated the book to your mom.
Yeah.
Who gave you the love of the written word. You have talked a little bit about your mom, but your mom must have had a huge influence on your writing.
Oh, she did. So my mom was an English major, and she read to me all the time. We used to go to the bookmobile when it came through Madison and pick out books and go to the library. And she was just a super influence to me on reading, also on grammar. She is a grammarian, I would say, and she corrects my grammar to this day. So that's always fun. But no, she was a big influence to me. My mom went to grad school at UW-Madison, and she never left. And that's why I was born and raised in Madison. She's from New York, though, from Long Island. And I wanted to dedicate it to her, because she actually started her career in the New York City publishing world just for a few years before deciding to go back and to grad school. And she wound up teaching English as a second language for many, many years at East High School and at what is now O'Keefe Middle School, I believe it's called now. It was Marquette Middle School. So, you know, she's just done so much with words and writing and the English language that it was kind of a no-brainer to me to dedicate this to her.
Well, I tell you what, your book, The Business Trip, was so much fun to read, and I hope a million people read it.
Thank you, Larry. I really appreciate that. It was really so much fun to write. I just had a blast doing it.
Well, those twists and turns, I don't know how you thought them all up. I would love to talk about that a little bit more, but we are out of time. Thank you, Jesse. So much.
You're
for
welcome.
It was a great hour talking with you, and I'm hoping and we have another chance to meet again and talk maybe about your next book. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Larry.
Jesse Garcia is the author, and her book is titled The Business Trip. What a fun read. Coming up, we are going to turn our attention to adult ADHD and talk with an expert in the field, Dr. Jake Behrens. That's coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.
It's all